The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi Mordechai Farkash now presents his lecture, Halachic Patient Advocacy.
What I'm going to begin is actually with a historical halachic discussion which took place in the year 1932, Tav Resh Tzadik Bet, on the Hebrew calendar, in the city of Krakow in Poland. It was a question which raised a lot of debate among the different rabbis in Eastern Poland, Galicia, and fortunately, being that there was in the early 30s, there were halachic books of responsa which were printed between 1931 and 1940, which gave us and gives us still today a chance to study and to learn and to understand what and why did the different rabbis rule the way they ruled. But let's go first to the scenario, to the discussion, what happened. And this scenario is described by those rabbis who are responding to this question. The issue was a certain individual, a Jewish man, who became ill with a very difficult illness, which the concern was not only about his personal recovery, but also once he recovers and before recovery mainly, what is going to happen to the concern for the germs that this person's belongings may attract and how that will impact others who come in contact with it. Unfortunately, we are all familiar now after going through the coronavirus, what it means isolation, and what it means quarantining, and we learned words that were never usually used until just recently, but all our children and ourselves became very equipped with those information, and with God's help, we were able to protect ourselves and our health. This is an ancient type of corona, which fortunately we did not experience in the modern day corona, because even though we were required to be isolated and to keep away distance from each other and so on, but I don't think there was ever in any country a decision or a discussion of burning down the belongings of that person who is attracted with corona. He was in isolation, waiting for recovery. But the fact that somebody recovered to say that whatever he was touching or wearing or taking along with him to his isolation period should be destroyed. But we are talking about a different type of law and a different type of requirement in those countries where the requirement was that if you are carrying this illness, you are going to have to, once you recover, you're going to have to burn everything you have, everything that you came in contact with, everything that belongs to you. For a Jewish man, the challenge was now, what is going to happen with his tefillin? Tefillin is a very holy object that we all have to put on every single day, except Shabbat and Yom Tov. And he would have liked to take the tefillin along with them to the hospital. But not going into the hospital while carrying your tefillin with you, you know that that will result, once you recover with God's help, those tefillin are going to be put in to fire. You're going to burn them. You're going to destroy them, which is a very, very strict prohibition. This morning, we were reading a paragraph of this coming weekly Torah portion, and this is actually the source which we all read this morning, in regard to the prohibition not to destroy anything which carries God's name with them, with it. If you have your paper in front of you, those who need one, there is on the chair. So on text number 2, I'm going to read you the first paragraph. This comes from the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, and he writes it in Ilchas Yesodei Torah, the laws of the foundations of Torah, chapter 6. He writes as follows, in the bottom of the page number 2. Whoever destroys one of the holy and pure names with which the Holy One, blessed be he, is called, is liable for lashes according to scriptural law. This is the general punishment for violating a negative prohibition. This punishment is given because such an act violates one of the Torah's prohibitions. The prohibition is derived as follows. With regard to worshiping of false gods, he quotes the verse from this week's parsha, Parshas Re'eh, Deuteronomy chapter 12, that the verse says, V'ibadetem eshmam min ha'makom ahu, and you shall destroy their names from this place, meaning once you enter the land, God wants the Jewish people, the Israelites, to get rid of the idols that they come in contact with, which was left there from the previous nations. So we have a mitzvah to get rid of them, to destroy them. Yet the verse says, Lo ta'asun kein la'ashem elokeichem. Do not do this to God, your Lord. That words, Lo ta'asun kein, is what teaches us this Lo ta'aseh, this negative prohibition, never to destroy that which has God's name in it. Obviously, when you are taking a pair of tefillin, the name inside this black boxes of the tefillin, we have numerous times the name of God mentioned, and by destroying them, you will violate the prohibition. This is desecrating God's name. It's called Bizayon HaKodesh, and therefore, the family of the patient wanted to know, get advice and guidance by the rabbis of Poland. What should we do in regard to this individual? Taking the tefillin, knowing that it's going to be burned, or have him be in the hospital without putting on tefillin every day, but we are protecting the holy object of tefillin. The question, I believe, is pretty clear. The references that we have for this question is, number one, there were two brothers, both rabbis. One was in the city of Chibin, and one was in the city of Dubrava. This is two cities in Galicia, in eastern Poland. We have their responsa, we have their books, which were printed. The brother, one brother, his name was Reb Nachum Weinfeld. His responsa is printed in a book called She'elot U'Tshuvot, responsa of Chazon Nachum. And his brother was Reb Dov Berish Weinfeld, which he wrote his responsa and printed in a book called Dovev Meisharim. The Reb Nachum, unfortunately, did not make it to the war. They were from the first cities attacked by the Nazis coming in September 1939 to Poland. His brother escaped to Russia and eventually came to Israel, where he built a famous yeshiva. Till today, it's known as the Yeshiva of Chibin, the Chibina Yeshiva in Jerusalem. They both were in the opinion that rather than having the name of God destroyed and burned, that patients should not bring his tefillin along with them. And they very much had established the principle of a strict the prohibition of destroying Hashem's name is worse than having the patient not putting on tefillin. However, there were other rabbis, amongst them rabbis in the city of Krakow, Stanislav, this is all surrounding cities, that we also have their books of responsa printed. Those who don't have a full library of printed books of responsa, you can go simply to a website called hebrewbooks.org, and they have all those books of Rispanza online for free. You can look them up if you want. I can give you the references. You have to read Hebrew, obviously. And you're going to see the all give and take. This goes on pages of discussion. Yes, tefillin, not tefillin, burning the tefillin, not burning the tefillin. What takes precedence? So when you study that subject, you realize, and even Rabbi Weinfeld, the one who was strictly forbidding bringing the tefillin, says that the majority of the rabbis ruled that the tefillin should be taken in together with the patient, but I can still agree to disagree with their opinion. I don't think that the tefillin should be brought in. We will come back to some of their references. 10 years later, this is 1932, Tovrish Tzadik Beis. Exactly 10 years later, we have the same question. This is now 1942, 43, in the United States of America. There is a rising star in Halacha, a rabbi who just recently arrived from Lithuania, who we all, I'm sure, heard and is very famous and known for his halachic authority here for us Jews in the United States of America and all over the world, with the name of Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe Feinstein was asked the very same question about a person who is being taken to the hospital, and it's a modern-day question for him. He did not see the books which were printed in Poland just a couple years earlier in the 1930s. So he is now personally getting involved in this discussion, and he goes and very interestingly uses some of the very same sources described by the previous rabbis, and he comes up with a conclusion again, like the Weinfeld brothers, not to have the Jew putting on tefillin rather than causing it, God forbid, to be burned. A couple years later, now we're moving to the 50s, there is a rabbi in Manchester who also survived the war. He was originally from Grosswerdein, which is in Transylvania, the famous Reb Yitzchak Menachem, Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss. He wrote also many volumes of halachic responsa called the Minchas Yitzchak. And his books are also very popular and very used very much as a source of authority in Jewish law. He was a rabbi in Manchester, England, who wants to survive the war, and then he became the rabbi of the religious community of Jerusalem, known as the Eda Haredis, and he passed away in the 80s. He discusses the same question. He did see what those books wrote. He saw what the Weinfeld brothers wrote. He saw what the other rabbis in Krakow in the 1930s wrote on the subject. But he too comes with the conclusion not to let the tefillin being brought together with the patient, because the concern of burning down the tefillin is more concerning than having the Jew putting on the tefillin. The same question is also sent to a rabbi in Zurich, Switzerland, also a Holocaust survivor, in a great halachic authority, Reb Yaakov Breisch, who wrote a book called Chelkat Yaakov, happens to be, was a brother-in-law of the rabbi of Manchester. He came up and he says, I think that it should be okay to bring in the tefillin. And he's using the same reference of the Rambam that we read earlier, but he continues one more paragraph in the Rambam. So let us all continue that paragraph and see how he reaches his conclusion. So you have the paper with you. So we read about the prohibition. Then the Rambam continues in a separate halacha. When God's name is written on a utensil, somebody put the name Yud and K and Vav and K on a utensil, one should cut off God's name and bury it. Remove it of the utensil and bury it. Even when God's name is engraved on a metal or glass utensil, and one melts the utensil, one should be punished by lashing. Instead, one should cut off God's name and bury it. You can't this meant that you can't just have the name of God being, you know, being melting in fire, and that's how you're gonna get rid of it. This includes the prohibition of Lo Ta'asun Ken Lashem Elokeichem. Do not do it to God. You have to be careful with his name. Continue. Similarly, if God's name was written on one's flesh, okay? Now I'm talking about a tattoo. You have a Yud and a K and a Vav and a K on your own body. Says the Rambam, one should not wash or anoint to oneself. You can take a shower, because when you take a shower and you scrub your body, you might scrub off God's name. And this is strictly prohibited. No showers for you. Okay? Nor may one stand in a place of filth. This is because you are exposing God's name to a not clean place. But listen to that. If it occurs that such a person, meaning the person with the tattoo, must immerse because of a mitzvah, assume that he's ritually impure, and he has to go to the mikveh. The Torah gives us strict orders how to regain your purity. So now the person needs to go to the mikveh because of the mitzvah of regaining your purity. Can't go to the mikveh, I go down to the mikveh, I'm causing the God's name to be, perhaps, deleted. What should he do? He should wind reeds around the name and immerse himself. If he cannot find reeds, he should wind his clothes around it, make sure that it doesn't attach strongly to your body, you have to let the water go through, and that's how you immerse yourself in the mikveh. Exactly, it's in the same halacha. So what does the Rambam tell us? And this is what some of the rabbis dealing with this question, we're learning out from this halacha. What is the difference between destroying God's name and entering to the mikveh? The difference is with a famous halachic concept called ma'aseh, which means an act directly, versus grammar, an act which is done indirectly. When you wash yourself in the shower, when you take a piece of soap, rubbing your skin with God's name is spelled out, you're directly impacting the name of God with your action. By entering a pool, by entering a mikveh, while having God's name, yes, it might end up causing the name of God be erased, because once you put it in water, the water has an impact on the ink, and God's name may be erased, but this is an indirect cause. That's called grama, and grama is an old area in halacha which we do find leniency in certain matters when it's done indirectly. In that case, you take this halacha and you apply it to our scenario. You have a person who wants to put on tefillin every day. Taking his tefillin to the hospital, is he directly burning his tefillin, or while taking them to the hospital, eventually when you recover and you go out, you might cause it to be burned, or it will be burned, and so on. But it's not your own directly personal actions, and that's why they wanted to say that that should be okay. Where am I going to with this discussion? In here is exactly the point of today's topic. The same Rabbi Weiss who prohibited taking the tefillin in, and he saw what all the previous rabbis wrote on the subject, and he quotes them and he brings them as references, and he actually goes into a give and take in their discussion. 10 years later, now we are in 1963, is being asked the same question by a patient in Manchester who needs to go into the hospital and his tefillin, the government said, is going to have to be burned. He says, I wrote about it previously, and he references to the original response that you wrote on the subject, but he says, I am changing my mind. What happened? I have a neighbor who shared with me a letter that he received from no other than the Lubavitcher Rebbe, on a similar subject, but unrelated to burning tefillin. I read that letter, And I realized that I was missing one important element in my response. What was the letter? And we have the Rebbe's letter printed too. The Rebbe writes to a rabbi in Manchester who was dealing with a person who was taken into the hospital, and he had to spend a long time period in the hospital while wearing a catheter. Am I spelling, pronouncing it right? Yeah, basically, more like, I still have my Jerusalemite Yiddish that doesn't let me adapt any language 100%. That's fine, that's kosher. And when you daven, when you pray, we all know that a part of the conditions into prayer, the place has to be clean, the person has to be clean. I'm talking physically clean. You cannot just put on tefillin in the bathroom, forgive me. You gotta be respectfully doing it, and the person has to be clean, making sure that there's no dirt on your body, which will prevent you from doing a mitzvah. So the rabbi in Manchester, who was dealing with a patient who is going into the hospital, apparently wrote to the Lubavitcher Rebbe in New York different ideas how to help that patient who is not going to be able to put on his tefillin maybe because he is in a state of uncleanliness, right? The Rebbe gives them a very interesting response. First of all, getting into the techniques of a catheter and basically explaining that the way a catheter is built and works, and the idea is that it is not considered a filthy place. The waste is covered, it is not exposed, there is no real smell coming out. First of all, getting into halachic references, what is considered not clean versus clean? Okay, so this is again one of the halachic subjects. What is the conditions of a clean person and a clean place for prayer? The Rebbe says to him then, you suggest that maybe you should pray in his mind. He doesn't have to verbalize the words, which again makes it less issue. The Rebbe writes, studying Torah, you can fulfill the obligation by studying in your mind. Prayer needs to be by mouth. Let's figure out what we can do to help him pray normally. And he gives him the idea, like I explained before, different ideas about a catheter. And then he says, I want you to realize, very important, when we deal with a patient, you cannot just deal with what is the kosher and non-kosher idea for whatever, prayer, tefillin. The issue is not only the holy objects or the holy words. You must take in consideration what impact is it going to have on the patient. And he references to a very interesting halacha in the laws of Shabbat. Somebody is very ill, he wants the family to write something important as a will. You can desecrate Shabbat in order to calm him down. And the Rebbe says that has to be in consideration. We're now the same rabbi in Manchester who is dealing with tefillin into a hospital. He's saying, one second, I did not realize after all these discussions, everything is about the holiness of the tefillin, and what is more important, is it pekuach nefesh, saving a life, is it protecting the tefillin, is it the mitzvah of putting on tefillin, is it the prohibition of destroying God's holy name? This is all nice and great, and we need to bring it into the discussion, but how can I forget that we have to also bring in the patient into the discussion? And it changes his ruling. He says, the feeling and the impact medically which is going to be on the patient knowing that he cannot put on tefillin for a such long time period will definitely have a negative impact on him, and we have an obligation to improve his health. This is our responsibility. What's going to happen that we are trying to protect the community? So then we're going to have the mitzvah to protect the community. And if this is going to have to be burned, it's going to have to be burned. We are protecting lives. And this is the revolutionary idea that been ruling in areas of halacha to do with a patient is to place the patient on the front of the burner, so to speak, at the front of the discussion, to realize that, yes, there are black and white areas, but this also has to be considered and adapted while we are considering what is he going to feel, what's going to be the patient's feeling. It's interesting, and this is in parentheses kind of, but maybe not in parentheses, that the same discussion was when rabbis had discussed in the early 50s when a blind person should be able to walk into synagogue with a leading dog. What do you call it, the leading dog?
Service animal.
So he should be able to walk in with that today in the synagogue, to which Reb Moshe Feinstein, again, the great authority of halacha here in the United States, ruled in favor. And he brought interesting references, proofs that it's kosher to bring in a dog into the synagogue for that purpose. There were others who disagreed. Very interesting sources for disagreeing. I mean, in the Torah, we find that you cannot exchange selling a dog and with the money purchasing a kosher animal to bring as an offering. So there is something about bringing in dogs to the sanctuary, to the holiness, which some rabbis were considering. And here, too, the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, had come out in supporting Rabbi Feinstein's psak ruling. But also, dealing a little bit with the subject of a dog versus a temple and disproving those original references brought by the other rabbis, that you can't compare the idea of the sacrifice and a person walking in with a dog, but again, emphasizing this very great idea, which we mentioned earlier, you know what halacha says and concerns itself with regard to a person which cannot attend services for a long while. You know what impact it makes on the person? Let's bring in that into the discussion. Very original and very, persistent with that concept of taking in the consideration of the patient. Matter of fact, the Rebbe even wrote to a famous doctor in Israel in the 70s, asking to change the names of the hospitals in Israel. You know what a hospital is called in Israel? Bet Cholim. The Rebbe writes to Dr. Shani, a famous doctor in Israel, a professor of Tel HaShomer Hospital. The Rebbe says, why Bet Cholim? Bet Cholim means the house of the sick, the house of the healed. Give them some chance. Call it Bet Refuah, the house of healing. Merkaz Refui. And by the way, many hospitals in Israel change their names. Today, you can drive by hospitals. I'm not saying you walk into a hospital. You drive by a hospital in Israel, and you're going to see Merkaz HaRefui Shiva, the center of healing. The center of healing, Merkaz Bet Refua Mayanei Yeshua. They have names, but it's called not Bet Cholim. Can you imagine? The Rebbe writes, a person goes down. Imagine, you take the taxi. You got to go to the hospital. It's enough that you have to go to the hospital. You say, I'm going to Bet Cholim. Abba, I'm going to Bet Cholim. I'm going to the... And the person looks at himself, I'm already a chole, I'm already stamped with a signature as a chole, as a person who is healed. The house I'm going is the house of the healed and the sick. What impression does it make on him? Give him a chance. Give him a moment to feel inspired. And that's what Bet Refuah is, the house of the healing. Anyway, the... interesting, very unfortunate, related reference is what I saw recently in a book of responsa called Mima Makim. Mima Makim was a book of responsa written by a rabbi who lived later here in the Lower East Side, but he was the so-called authority in the Kovne ghetto. And after the war, he put together all the questions and answers that he was dealing with issues coming up halachically in the Kovne ghetto, which was destroyed in 1942 in Lithuania. And he discusses the following question. I'm giving you the scenario, sharing some of his discussion, but you see the way the approach works in the same idea. He says there was the Nazim, Yimach Shemom, decided to open the hospital and the small ghetto of Kovne. There was the big ghetto of Kovne and the small ghetto of Kovne. And that was the question I was asked. In that hospital, there's a person, a young man, which his leg was amputated. They removed his leg. He's in the hospital, and he has not to recover. He wants to daven. He wants to put on tefillin. There is a rumor. It doesn't say a law, no decision, but there is a rumor that goes around that the Germans, after one recovers from that hospital, they take all his personal belongings and they burn it in fire. And the question I was asked, should we let this guy have tefillin being sent to him with the concern that the Germans are going to burn his tefillin once he leaves the hospital? Same question in such a difficult circumstance. It's mind-boggling. He obviously doesn't have the book of, no books in Kovne, but he's using his memory. He mentioned some of these discussions that we saw from the Rambam, back and forth. Is that considered an act? Is that considered indirect, destroying God's name? He actually brings a Talmudic source that there was this rabbi whom you read on Yom Kippur of the Ten Mordos, Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion, who was teaching Torah, and he was told by his colleague, the Romans are after you, and they're going to burn you down together with your Torah. And it didn't take long when actually that took place. And he says, how was he continuing learning from a Torah scroll, but he was warned by his colleagues that you are going to be burned? I guess you have to consider what you are dealing with now and not so worry about what's going to happen in the future. He goes into the discussion of the mikveh, which we mentioned. He ends up his halachic ruling that I decided to send the tefillin to this individual. They sent his tefillin, and he says, this is actually the end, which brings the end of the story. This is going 10 pages of responsa. The end, he says, it was the day after Rosh Hashanah, 1941, the Germans actually ordered to destroy the small ghetto. They burned the entire ghetto, including the hospital. All patients who were in the hospital, together with the nurses, were all destroyed, burned in that fire, died in that fire, including the young man who I sent the tefillin, and including the doctor, Dr. Davidovich, who asked me the question about this young man who wants the tefillin. And he says, but lo and behold, to my surprise, one of the Jewish people who survived the burning of the hospital came with a pair of tefillin in his hand. And he says, there was a patient in the hospital who was wearing this tefillin, and he was tremendously devoted to protect the tefillin while he had them. And when he realized that the end is coming, he understood that the Germans are about to burn down the ghetto and the hospital. He gave it to me, and he says, if you have a chance and you survive, please bring back the tefillin. Make sure that they don't get burned. And this is the tefillin he brought with him. So the tefillin survived, and unfortunately, the person did not survive. What the discussion teaches us, and this is what I'm trying to come out with today's lesson, and I want to respond to some questions, is it's an example of a very major debate and a major concern that Halacha was going back and forth, trying to figure out what to do in order to support not so much the physical, whether we should drive him to the hospital on Shabbos or not to drive him on Shabbos. Should we let him eat non-kosher or not let him eat non-kosher? That wasn't the discussion. The discussion is whether to do a positive mitzvah, which the Jew wants to do, and we assume that would help him. Once you get into the discussion, you don't only discuss whether or not permitted or forbidden to deal and to do such circumstances, and what eventually now that we have the lesson with us is to consider what and how the impact of the decision is going to be on the person who is, as they say, Nebuch, in this situation. And to tell a Jew who is used to put on tefillin every day from his bar mitzvah, or when the day he decided to put on tefillin, and you tell him, listen, for the next, who knows, unforeseeable future, you cannot put on tefillin. Yes, because we're trying to regain your health, and it's very concerning that we're going to have to burn it. You tell him not to put on tefillin, the impact, the mental, emotional impact of him is what supports, if we have references, if we have sources, who will allow us to take the tefillin in such a case, we will support it just in order to ensure the well-being of the patient. I did not mention, but this is brought down by all those authorities I discussed before, is a questionable concern of whether or not God's name will be erased. Rubbing on your flesh, you know what you're doing. You are causing God's name to be deleted. Entering into immersing waters, when you need, for the sake of a mitzvah, if you have to, let's say, regain your purity, it could, and it could not. Even Maimonides does not write those words, which it's called in halacha safek, but many other great authorities of the era of Maimonides, the Rashba and others, do mention this very same idea, that when it's not certain, it's only in the category of safek, of doubt, therefore you will be allowed. So entering the hospital is what some of the rabbis wanting to allow the person taking his tefillin into the hospital, knowing that it's going to have to be burned later, is using this very same argument. The first argument we mentioned is directly or indirectly. The second argument is, if you understand the Rambam in that manner, are you for sure removing God's name? Like, is it going to be burned or not? By the way, I was very surprised. It was a very interesting revelation to me. I was speaking on the subject recently in a Shluchim convention in Montana, and there was a visiting rabbi from Connecticut, Rabbi Hecht, whose father was the Rebbe's first shliach to New Haven. I think even he was very connected to the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he tells me, I know for sure that the previous Rebbe wrote to my father on that subject, but I can't tell you for sure, and I never saw it, or I can't find it. I went home, you know, start looking in the book, look in the index. It's a very short time period that the previous Rebbe met Rabbi Hecht. That's between 1940 and 1950. And lo and behold, I did find that letter. And it doesn't say clearly regarding burning the tefillin, but he writes to Rabbi Moshe Hecht, he says, regarding whatever student, the tefillin that he did not take with him to the hospital, I disagree with. He says, not good, lo tov asu, it wasn't done properly. And there is a far concern that the tefillin are going to be burned. Could be that they're going to figure out a way of cleaning them, that they shouldn't carry any germs or any impact of the hospital stay. So to prevent them from taking the tefillin, now, I can't use it as a source to say that the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, in this old great halachic discussion whether or not to bring your tefillin in and let it be burned later or not, the question that we brought was raised in Poland in 1931 in Krakow, was that his opinion? I can't say. But he does offer the suggestion that if you would, I guess, advocate the cleaning of the tefillin, or like I said before, you don't have to burn them. Speak to the hospital, they might decide to bury them. And then you're not violating any of these issues, any of these prohibitions. Thank you.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.